It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Podcast presents Brett Baer's All-Star Panel.
America's got to be in the lead if you want to deal with these threats. We're going to lead.
The morning is over. The Shiva is done. And if you're a conservative, you should be optimistic.
You know, my main priority right now is making sure that it delivers for the American people.
We have to make our country great again, and I will do that.
I think the president gets criticized by people all the time for the stuff he says, by people who ignore what he does.
Now, Fox's chief political anchor, Brett Baer.
This week kicked off with plenty of news surrounding both presidential candidates in a video released on Truth Social. Former President Donald Trump went on the record about his stance on abortion, saying he believes the issue should be left to the states, which led to a myriad of responses from Americans across the country.
The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land.
And President Biden is back working on student loan forgiveness, announcing a new plan to slash student debt for nearly 30 million Americans and give automatic relief to those in certain financial programs or who have been paying back student loan debt for decades. On Capitol Hill, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer must decide how to proceed with the articles of impeachment against Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas that will be delivered to the upper chamber possibly this week, maybe next. To discuss all of this and more, we bring in our panel, Republican strategist Colin Reed, Fox News Audio political anchor Jared Halperin, and Democratic pollster Carly Cooperman. Jared, it seems like abortion has become the issue of the day for the Biden campaign, and they are touting it from the rooftops just days after former President Trump's announcement. Now you have news that not only that we knew Florida was having a 6-week abortion ban on the ballot in Florida, but now Arizona is getting ready for a complete abortion ban, and it's making headlines. That has to make the Biden campaign very happy.
Well, I think you've seen this really energize Democrats, certainly the Biden campaign, even going back to certainly the 2022 midterm elections and how it seemed to galvanize the vote in an awful lot of congressional districts. And listen, I think when you look at what the Supreme Court of Arizona, the state Supreme Court ruled, you know, it sort of opens up a lot of the arguments that the White House and President Biden have been trying to make, noting that this is now a law in Arizona that dates back to 1864. President Biden, in a statement, noting that that was before Arizona was a state, well before women had the right to vote. And Karine Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, saying it is because of former President Trump's 3 Supreme Court justices that there is now this chaos and confusion playing out across the country today. And to your point, Arizona, one of those states that could decide this issue on the ballot in November. It is going to be on the ballot in Florida, in a few other states too. And I think for Democrats, as they look at polling numbers and they look for ways to energize voters, maybe energize voters who aren't super enthusiastic about President Biden, this is one of those issues that they believe can really get folks out to the polls and help them, not just in a presidential election, but maybe some of those down ballot Senate and House races as well.
Colin, you have to look at the back and forth between former President Trump and what was a close ally, Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, very public kind of back and forth on the issue of abortion. Who knows how this is going to play out over the months, but clearly Democrats are going to try to use this. Already the White House today saying there are now 21 extreme state abortion bans in effect across the country. And that, in effect, has changed the dynamic as far as this campaign and what it's talking about, despite all the things that we're dealing with.
Yeah, politics is the game of persuasion. And when you find an issue that voters agree with you more than your opponents, you stick to it relentlessly. And if you look at the issue set right now, there's very few issues that favor the Democrats, whether it's the economy, inflation, the border, you name it. Abortion is one where they have an advantage. And that's why they're spending so much time and soon to be ad money litigating the cause. Here's a challenge for conservatives. For 50 years, Republicans in the pro-life movement told voters that once Roe versus Wade would be overturned, it would go back to the states. And then they got what they wanted with the Supreme Court's ruling in June of 2022. And since then, the message has been very muddled. Some people favor a federal ban. Others don't favor a federal ban. But it's been all over the map. Yesterday, President Trump finally gave some cohesion to the argument. And as the head of the party, as someone who's been able to bend his will to the party, it's now time for the party to unify around that, at least for this election season. But in the meantime, I expect this issue to come up time and time again, as Democrats have very few cards left to play. This is one of them. They know it's worked in the past, and they're hoping it can get them to victory again in the future.
Yeah, Carly, the Biden campaign saying this ruling in Arizona is the result of extreme agenda of Republican elected officials who are committed to ripping away women's freedom. It's kind of cut and dry. However, you know, former President Trump was trying to tiptoe through this and to try to take the issue off the table. Doesn't seem like he's done that in the wake of this Arizona ruling, in the wake of what we see in Florida. And, you know, would he have been better served to have a position at 15 weeks, like many European countries do, and turn the tables on Democrats and say anything past that is extreme?
Yeah, look, that's absolutely right. I think the bottom line is that Trump is aware of the political implications of the issue. He knows that he's going to upset conservatives and he's going to upset some people in his base by saying what he said, but he also knows that they're basically not going to abandon him and they're not going to not vote for him while saying that. So he's going to upset people on the right no matter what he says, whether it's a 15-week ban or letting the states decide. And I think regardless, this is going to give momentum for Democrats to just any opportunity that Democrats have to talk about abortion, to talk about a legal right to abortion is something that is working for them, right? We know that voters are unhappy with how the Biden administration is handling a lot of issues, but this is one that is on their side. And this is going to be momentum, you know, hopefully to energize the base. There's a lack of enthusiasm among Democratic voters that this is one issue that's going to rally them. And then what played out in Arizona is exactly the point that, you know, it really just went right into the hands of what Democrats have been trying to say over and over again. This is what happens if you do leave it up to the states. And so having these ballot measures to come and vote for a right to abortion in the state is a way to get Democrats to turn out. It's a way to build back support for Biden where it's otherwise there's, you know, this lack of enthusiasm among Democratic voters.
Okay. Meantime, Jared, on Capitol Hill, you know, we're talking about tough issues for Republicans. Tough issue again for Republicans is watching the governance of the House Republicans. You have Marjorie Taylor Greene threatening what she says is going to move forward, this vacate effort on Speaker Mike Johnson. And she's saying, and I'm quoting here, "We are losing Republican members of Congress under Mike Johnson. He is not a Republican Speaker of the House. He's the Democrat Speaker of the House." That's a member of his own caucus. And he has to get some big things across the finish line in a short amount of time. FISA reauthorization, the supplemental for Ukraine and Israel funding, let alone what they're hoping for on something with the border.
And it could be that Ukraine funding, Brett, that you know, kind of determines the fate here of Speaker Mike Johnson. One of the things that Congresswoman Greene, Marjorie Taylor Greene, has been very vocal about it is that there should not be any more of this aid to Ukraine with that kind of vote. It seems like Mike Johnson is kind of moving in a direction that would open up maybe not exactly what the Senate passed, but some sort of legislative vehicle to get Ukraine aid across the finish line here. Would that be enough then for her to trigger this motion to vacate? And if it is, it is sort of allowing this Ukraine aid, which is something that has had an awful lot of support among Republicans, an awful lot of support from Democrats because President Biden wants it done. Would that be enough for maybe Democrats to bail them out if necessary? It would not take very many Republicans joining with every Democrat to oust Speaker Johnson in the same way that they successfully ousted Kevin McCarthy. In McCarthy's case, not a single Democrat came to his aid, came to bail him out. Would that be a different scenario for Mike Johnson based on allowing maybe a vote on this Ukraine aid, allowing a vote on some of the immigration proposals or border proposals, perhaps, that President Biden has put forward? So those could be the two issues, ironically enough, I think, that maybe determine the future of Mike Johnson and whether or not he's able to kind of navigate those two issues in a way that, you know, kind of has everybody back off this very serious threat to his speakership that exists right now.
But is it really a threat to a speakership? I suppose it is. But who else in the caucus can have enough votes to be speaker? We saw what happened after Kevin McCarthy.
Well,
and Mike Johnson was the default after three others.
Well, you're right. But that hasn't stopped the process before. And so I wonder if that would be enough of an argument this time around. You have heard from Republicans, even some who supported ousting Kevin McCarthy of that very thing, right? That this creates now a level of dysfunction. It because of the even slimmer Republican majority, it would increase the chance potentially of Hakeem Jeffries becoming speaker. So you're
right. And
that's
not a joke either, because it depends on who's in the chamber. Who's in the chamber when they're voting?
Yeah.
You could legitimately, Colin, have a speaker Hakeem Jeffries with just a few votes. Either not being there or not present or voting the other way.
Yeah, it's been tough sledding for the House Republicans over the last few weeks, and I think that's been putting it mildly. Look, the reason that Kevin McCarthy was ousted was less so, or two things. One, it's because his majority was so threadbare to start with as a result of candidates underperforming and candidate quality and just the underwhelming 2022 midterms that Republicans had. So they didn't have that huge majority. You have a 30, 40 seat majority. These backbenchers, these rabble rousers, they don't really matter. You have a 5, 6, 7, 8 majority. All of a sudden, they hold your fate in your hands. And then number two, a lot of this was personal toward him. The Democrats didn't bail him out because they didn't like him, frankly. And that was the problem that he had with a lot of his own members. So, but to your point, Brett, you can't replace somebody with no one. We saw from the 3-week fiasco last fall that Mike Johnson kind of ascended to the speakership because he was one of the last people standing. So I don't think that my sense is that he's on a little bit firmer footing. But yeah, anything can happen. This majority is so threadbare, and it creates challenging not only for the ability of what the House Republican Congress should be doing, which is spotlighting the excesses, the failures, and holding the Biden administration to account for many of their failures over the last 2 years, and giving former President Trump and his campaign items and topics to talk about in the news. Instead, the Republicans are on their heels right now, and it's not great for the party as a whole, and that's for sure.
Panel, we'll hold it right there.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Carly, I would argue that this is a very good week for the Biden campaign, and it's only Tuesday. There are a lot of things that seem to be going that way, and the polls... Recent polls have shifted in some of these swing states, seeing the current president bumping up a little bit. As you look at the election now, what are the thing that Democrats most fear heading towards November, 6.5 months away?
Yeah, that's right. There has been a subtle but real movement in the polls, I would say, over the last month, 4 to 6 weeks even. You know, Trump still by and large is ahead in many of the polls, but we are having polls coming out now with Biden having a lead. And in the swing states in particular, Biden is making gains. Trump's leads are narrowing across these states. And, you know, this is very close in a lot of these states. I think in terms of bad things for the Biden administration, it's when there's talk about the border crisis and when there's talk about immigration, you know, these are issues that play into Trump's strong suit. You know, there is a reason that he had the bipartisan Senate bill killed, which was the Biden administration's effort, I guess, or, you know, their hope in terms of getting measures passed that were going to help address this issue. The Biden administration knows that this is a weak point for them and that they have to come forward and doing something to acknowledge that. And, you know, the narrative on the economy is one that has been really, really challenging for the Biden administration this whole time, despite the fact that there have been all of these strong economic reports as with regards to job growth and unemployment remaining low, a strong economy, and even inflation coming down. This is something that Biden has struggled to get to translate into results for his polling and for his approval. And he is working tirelessly to try to get to change. But, you know, when the narrative speaks about immigration challenges and economic challenges for voters, he's on his heels, and hence why, you know, there is an eagerness to be able to shift the conversation to things like abortion rights and democratic values in the race.
Right. Threat to democracy and abortion had a bigger factor in 22 than we thought it was going to. And it did have an effect in a lot of those races. Jared, now President Biden is back on the student loan forgiveness train. Despite being kind of smacked down by a couple of courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, now trying at it again. There is obviously pushback on Capitol Hill, but is that an effective political tool for young people voting, or does it kind of piss off people who've paid their student loans down after working very hard to do that?
No, listen, I think there's certainly a double-edged sword. I do think that there's sometimes a bit of a misnomer that this is directed only at younger voters. When you look at especially the way that a lot of these student loan forgiveness plans have kind of been rolled out as of yet, they've dealt with people who have been paying their loans for, you know, 20 years in some cases. So not necessarily like millennials or Gen Zers, but sort of getting to that broader point, you hear the president talk all the time about giving people more breathing room. I think he views it in that context. This will certainly, it appears, face some legal scrutiny as the last one did. This one is crafted a little bit different. It aims to forgive, in some cases, what the president describes as runaway interest on some of these debts. It aims to eliminate debt for schools that are no longer schools or, you know, these for-profit colleges that have faced a lot of legal challenges as well. But it's clear that it's going to face a legal challenge again. I think that the struggle for the president is this was something that he ran on first in 2020, is running on it again in 2024. And you do hear that there is an awful lot of frustration that it's not something that he's been able to make good on in the way that he had hoped to. Now, again, this is a different kind of proposal. It uses a different law. If you recall, the first time around, the White House relied on kind of this post 9/11 kind of bill. The Supreme Court said that was not the way that it was intended, slapped it down. This uses a different kind of legal authority. It's called the Higher Education Act, little narrower in scope. But again, seems like it's something that's going to be decided not by Congress, but by the courts, Brett.
Right. And so on Capitol Hill, I mean, Congress does have the power of the purse, Colin. And so by the Constitution, if you're going to do something with money, usually, it is approved by Congress. And so that's kind of basic in its tenets. But is this something that Biden picks up around the edges, that he's working hard on it, despite the fact that he's been slapped down?
I mean, this is so offensive to so many people on so many levels. Set aside the fact that he did this in Wisconsin, a state he won by 20,000 votes 4 years ago, 6 months before an election. Let's examine some of the policy challenges with it. I mean, the cost of college now in some of these Ivy League institutions costs $90,000. The average salary in the United States last year was $60,000. So the prices are just getting higher and higher. They're out of control. And Biden's solution is just to ignore the problem and put Band-Aids on these problems. If this was such the right thing to do, he should pass a law to do it rather than have this go through the courts and inevitably get slapped down again. And it just sends the wrong message to the people who not only did it the right way and went to college, took out these burdensome loans, worked hard, paid them back, let alone the people who didn't go to college at all and paved their own way. The idea that, President Biden is going out there saying, you took on this debt, you knew what you were doing, and all of a sudden the government is just going to forgive it. It's just it speaks so badly to so many people. And then you've got people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez out there praising it because it'll allow people to travel abroad. I mean, it's just a huge, huge political loser for the White House and the Democrat Party as a whole. And I think they know it. But I think they also know they have problems with their younger base. They have problems with progressives, especially on the issue of what's happening in Israel right now. And this is just a bone to shore up a base ahead of an election that's looking increasingly perilous by the day.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Carly, last word, the Biden administration or the Biden campaign sees it differently. But they could campaign saying, we need control of Congress so that I can put through this bill and I'll sign it into law. But they're kind of reaching around the edges to make it happen. Final word here, though. Colin mentioned the Israel-Hamas battle over Gaza, and the administration has shifted its tone, in part, they say, because of the civilian casualties, and they want to see this ceasefire. There is movement afoot in the Middle East, but as far as the onus on Hamas to release the hostages or the specific concern for the American hostages, we don't hear that day to day as much. And I wonder how that plays politically. It seems that the Biden campaign is on one side defending, trying to shore up the progressive pro-Palestinian side of the party. And then also saying we're still standing by Israel, but just not completely.
The Biden administration is in a virtually impossible position at this point with regards to the Israel-Hamas war. Biden and his administration has repeatedly proclaimed their support for Israel, their support for a democratic ally in the Middle East. They know how important it is to continue that support. That said, I think that a lot of people are questioning Israel's approach and are frustrated with Netanyahu. And, you know, Biden has to acknowledge the very real realities that there is an increasing dissatisfaction among people in his base who are not happy with the civilian casualties and the humanitarian crisis that's taking place in Gaza. I think there's a narrative there that is so much more prominent as opposed to bringing the conversation back to the hostages, bringing the conversation back to why Israel is in this war in the first place, or that Hamas is using civilians as shields and that they're, they have broken the ceasefires repeatedly, including by attacking on October 7th. And this conversation around the war has become so much exclusively around the humanitarian crisis. And the Biden administration is acknowledging that and acknowledging their frustration with that aspect of what's going on. But, you know, I think Biden does have to do both. He has to acknowledge the problems with what's happening and the death toll, while also being an ally of Israel. And so I think you're going to hear both statements coming out of him.
Yeah. And it's getting tense, especially with Iran and, possibility of Hezbollah stepping up attacks as well. Panel, thanks so much. Now for a bit of history. On April 9th, 1963, Sir Winston Churchill was declared as an honorary U.S. citizen after former British Prime Minister Sir Winston Churchill presented a composed yet courageous leadership that inspired the United Kingdom's finest hour in World War II. President John F. Kennedy declared Churchill was a steadfast friend, the president proclaiming under the authority of Act by the 88th Congress that Churchill's bravery, charity, and valor, both in war and peace, have been a flame of inspiration in freedom's darkest hour, leading Churchill to become the first of only 8 people to be declared an honorary citizen of the United States. That'll do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. For Carly, Jared, and Colin, I'm Brett Baer. We'll see you next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.